Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, March 28th, 2024 on Connecticut Today, where we reflected on the life and times of former Connecticut Democratic U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman with Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose. We also got all the latest Bridgeport scoop and news from Only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi, and Quinnipiac University men's hockey play-by-play man Phil Jubileo joined us again, this time to chat about the Bobcats' prospects heading into the NCAA Men's Ice Hockey Tournament, which begins this weekend. Welcoming back this gentleman on short notice here. We chatted with him a few days ago, but could not do his show without hearing from Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose, on the passing of Connecticut U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman, former Senator Lieberman. Gary, good afternoon. Great to have you back. Thanks for taking the time. How are you?
Sure. Good to be here, Paul. Good to hear from you.
And, you know, Gary, in the pantheon of political names in Connecticut, the Bushes, the Dodds, Bob Gimo, Abe Ribicoff, you know, Joe Lieberman is certainly on that kind of Mount Rushmore of Connecticut politics, isn't he?
He absolutely is. All that he, you know, accomplished during his public career, all he did for Connecticut and the country. And absolutely, when we think of one of the really the great political leaders of our state, and then I would also say that, you know, of our nation too. I even though he was never president, he did run once. He didn't get too far in it, but nevertheless, you know, as a senator, all that he did for the country and the state of Connecticut, he is way up there in terms of reputation, accomplishments, and as you say, the Mount Rushmore of politics. Yeah, I would definitely put Joe Lieberman on that. Sure.
And as much, Gary, as guys our age and a little older, a little younger, we grew up in the era and the time of, oh my God, how could they nominate a Catholic, an Irish Catholic, to be president in 1960? You know, Joe Lieberman running but losing by a smidgen in Florida to Mr. Bush in 2000. Just the nomination of him as an Orthodox Jew running on a ticket was in and of itself groundbreaking as well.
It was really groundbreaking, and you know we've seen these ceilings, you know, shattered. You know, Obama, and then of course Joe Lieberman and Hillary's nomination, of course, and as you say, Catholic with you know, Jack Kennedy. So yeah, but you know what that really does is it tells you how much trust and confidence that people had in Joe Lieberman. He was absolutely revered by many people, and the fact that he was, as you say, you know, an Orthodox Jew, it really didn't that never registered in the minds of voters. It was not an issue, and polling continued to show that too during that campaign. It was never a major issue, largely because they trusted him. And they liked his position on, you know, centrist issues, his position on foreign policy. And, you know, Joe Lieberman, no, being Jewish really was not an issue in that campaign, not at all.
And Gary, the stuff that I'm reading today and undoubtedly you're reading and seeing coverage of and listening to, everybody, the first thing that people are citing with Joe Lieberman, not necessarily his roots or his religion or his specific positions on thing, but it was his demeanor, at least outwardly, his outward demeanor and his kind of calm reassurance that everybody can and should get along here, even if there are differences.
Yeah. He really was a gentleman. You know, when I went down to Washington with my students several times, we would meet with him. Our students were very much enamored with him, the way he interacted with them, respected them, fielded, you know, he was able to field their questions, even though maybe he, you know, thought, well, I've done this many times before. Yeah. But he really was, he connected with people in a way that I haven't seen a lot of the other people that we've elected to Congress connect, and Joe Lieberman was right there. He really was he really knew how to be a people person, and that, of course, carried him through his entire public career in the state legislature, attorney general, senator. But yeah, he knew how to interact and respect people, and it really didn't matter, as you note too, Paul, that if you had political differences, and that was one thing about Joe Lieberman that I think we're really going to miss, is that he was, in many ways, I felt, the model of how to respect people from a different party and with alternative views. Sure, we're gonna miss that tremendously.
And of course, and I was relating to some of the people around here beforehand who may here at the station from years ago who may not be attuned to this. His little tussle for the Senate with a guy named Ned Lamont. That and again, you know, Gary, it's funny. I was telling my engineer here about how Ned Lamont. You know, you remember obviously he wins the primary. And then I was talking about, the pack of reporters. And I wasn't doing a lot of talk back then. I was still doing reporting. And we would follow the campaigns around. And in a good-natured way, Gary, I was talking with the other radio people and TV people and PIM people. And we were all interviewing Mr. Lieberman and now Governor Lamont. And we're all saying, at least I was to a bunch of people, and we were laughing, there's no way Ned's beating him in the general election. I mean, it's just because of how much outside the left-leaning core of the party, how much the state liked him.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, his party largely abandoned him, and then they went with Ned, on that. And the Iraq War was a big issue there. But outside of the party, as you say, I mean, Ned Lamont appealed to really a particular segment of the Democratic Party and was able to win that primary. But Joe Lieberman, at the same time, he won votes not only from, moderate Democrats, but also Republicans and unaffiliated voters. And he was able to hold on to his seat. It was quite remarkable how he did that, how he formed his own Connecticut for Lieberman party and then held on. But his party turned against him and that's really what's going on with the Democratic Party these days. It's moved in a direction that Joe Lieberman certainly, could not identify with today. That's for sure.
Yeah. And finally, Gary, as a study, and I'm sure, you've talked about this for years with your students and others, one of the classic political television ads of all time was the Lowell Weicker, what was that, the Sleeping Bear. Yeah, yes. And for people who don't remember that, Gary, talk about that, because now who knows if somebody in the campaign came up with that or that was a consultant Joe Lieberman hired, but that was one of the great campaign ads of all time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm teaching a course on elections, and right now we're in the segment where we're covering campaign ads. And a lot of the research shows that ads don't make a difference, but then there is. Mm-hmm. But then they also conclude there are certain ads that do. And if there is an ad that comes to mind right away, of course, is the Sleeping Bear ad. And that is the ad that made a difference. It made Lowell Weicker look like he was, no longer responsive to the voters here in Connecticut, and it was time for a change. And Joe Lieberman really, it was amazing. It was really an upset, I felt, but nevertheless, it was the ad that did that. And Joe, appealed once again a little more to the center and the right, which really was able to push Weicker out of public office. And so that was a brilliant ad. It really was. I don't know who actually developed it or conceived of it, but whoever did really was the one that really, cost Weicker his seat in Senate. He really did.
And correct me finally, Gary, if I'm wrong, but wasn't there a push? I seem to remember this, and I guess I could Google it. Wasn't there a push by some conservative Republican? It may have been Bill Buckley, I'm not sure, who actually were like Republicans for Lieberman because they couldn't stand Lowell Weicker at the
time. That's right.
Yeah.
There was a real reaction to Weicker. They wanted him out. They felt that he had abandoned Republican principles. And in many ways he had. And perhaps the roots of that began with the Watergate hearings. But nevertheless, you're right. There were a lot of conservatives that really wanted to see Weicker gone. And Joe Lieberman came along, being an attorney general, centrist, conservative on moral and social issues, actually. And he was able to take on Weicker. And there was that major election and that campaign ad. I'm so glad you mentioned that. Is what really made the difference, I think.
Yeah. Dr. Gary Rose. Gary, thank you once again for the appearance and have a great weekend. We appreciate it.
Okay, Paul.
Thanks, Gary. Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University. Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, good afternoon. How are you?
You mean, Uncle Paulie, I don't get to sleep in?
Not on next Thursday, week. No. Well, it depends. We'll negotiate a time. How's that? I don't want you getting up too early. I don't want you getting up too early.
I'll stay up all night. I won't go to sleep.
You'll be ramming down some Red Bulls and some coffee.
No, gin.
Jeez.
And espresso.
Beautiful. All right. The saga of this storage facility in the North End. It sounds like a Netflix series. What's going on here?
Oh, okay. So last year, the Planning and Zoning Commission blocked a proposal, rejected a proposal for a storage facility to be constructed at the former Stop and Shop on Madison Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A lot of North End residents came out against it. The Gannon administration came out against it. And so Planning and Zoning ruled against it. And so it was appealed. And yesterday, Judge Dale Ratcliffe ruled against the city. And he ordered the Planning and Zoning Commission to approve a special permit to locate the storage facility at the former Stop and Shop on Madison Avenue. And that's where we're at. So I haven't heard whether, you know, the city's going to appeal it or just let it go. I think there were some election politics that were involved in it, you know, during the timing of it. But, right now it looks like this paves the way for a storage facility in the North End. And they really don't want much up there. So the counteroffer was, hey, instead of doing a storage facility, mm-hmm. how about some senior housing, you know, or a senior center on the property? Because the North End residents really don't want much up there, but they could not reach any common ground. And so the P&Z decision was appealed, and the judge said, no, they have a right to it's zoned
sure.
for that type of facility.
So, but what, Lenny, was the opposition? Are they worried about, you know, bodies being stored there? I mean, what was there opposition to just the fact that, oh, we don't want a storage facility here because who knows who might use that? Or like you said, they don't want anything. Were there marked reasons why the opposition was to a storage facility?
Yes, yes, and yes, all of which the judge ruled against. So they were saying it will decrease property values. There was no real definitive explanation of that. The property is inconsistent with the residential neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, not really. It will have an adverse impact on neighborhood traffic. And so, yes, there were several things that were raised by the residents. And as a result, by the Planning and Zoning Commission, but the judge said no. And it's a storage facility. What could be that? You know. But again, they're very particular in North End what they want.
Yeah, and this building's been empty for how many years now? Did I read?
Oh goodness, over a decade.
Wow.
So this was the former Stop and Shop, which was a in and of itself that people didn't want that kind of traffic. You know, and so if you think, the Stop and Shop is going to generate a lot more traffic in the storage facility, if that's the concern. So we'll see, we'll see what happens, people are saying, hey, maybe the city can just buy the property. And so the developer bought that property for about $4 million.
Oh, man.
And so, does the city want to get into that kind of a thing? I'm not sure. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
All right. Mayor Ganim, next budget proposal, no tax increase. Is this correct?
Yes. Well, that's shocking. Joe Ganim doesn't raise taxes again, right? I mean, as I wrote, love him or loathe him, Joe Ganim doesn't raise taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mayor's going to submit his budget proposal Monday night to the city council. It's going to call for a no tax increase with a little bit more money for the school system. It's not going to make the education advocates really, really happy because they want a lot more than the mayor is going to give, but he's going to give a little bit more. So, no tax increase, a little bit more for the education system. And we'll see what the city council does with it. So this will be referred Monday night to the Budget and Appropriations Committee, and that's for the nuts and bolts of the budget is done. It's done at committee level, not at the full body. So it'll be, about 6 to 8 weeks they'll go through this process, and sometime in late May they'll set the budget with no tax increase, with some adjustments here and there, but nothing dramatic.
Lenny, before we get to your former boss and some reflections you have on former Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman, staying in the city here, what's the latest twist and turn here now with the school superintendent Carmela Levy David and her desire to close some schools and getting pushback on that? Now they're going to study this. A lot of fallout on this. Was this a misstep by her? Are there forces telling her, hey, back off a little? What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think it's really, let's take a little bit more time. So she met with the mayor, and, what came out of this is let's do a study on the state of all the school facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So the superintendent said, listen, we've got about at least a half a dozen schools that have chronic problems.
Yeah.
Right? And, there were some, defensive situations where some of the parents didn't like, what was my ticket to end up and how fast is this going to go? And there were some public hearings on it. And I think basically superintendent meeting with the mayor said, hey, let's step back a little bit. Let's not push the issue. Let's do a complete facility study at all the schools to see what really needs to be done. So I think it's just going to take their time, be a little bit more cautious, and nothing is really going to be done until, probably in a year and a half or so.
All right. That seems fair. Before we end up with your former boss, as we always do, recollections, Lenny, as almost all of us have in this business and others, of former Connecticut U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman, who passed away recently, tragically, of complications after a fall. He was 82. And, Lenny, I know there are some people that had a problem with him here and there, but, man, I've been covering this stuff for about 40 years. I know you've been doing it decades long as well. I think, Lenny, you're hard-pressed to find a politician in America universally at least respected as much as Joe Lieberman was.
Agreed. There's so many things to think about with Joe Lieberman, but I think of 2006,
mm-hmm.
Democratic primary between the incumbent Joe Lieberman and Ned Lamont, who's the governor. And people were all cranked up at Connecticut over the war. They felt like in Iraq and that Joe Lieberman was playing too much kissing face with the president over it. It'd be too much of a war hawk. But what I remember is Lamont wins the primary. And what happens is Joe Lieberman becomes a de facto Republican candidate. Do you remember Alan Schlesinger?
Yes.
He, former mayor. So he was the Republican candidate.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of like, no.
Yeah.
All the Republican base just galvanized behind Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, they were telling him, as I remember, to get out of the race, if I remember that correctly. Yeah.
But it was intriguing because Lieberman, running on an independent line that he created, this is before we had the paper ballot.
Mm.
Today we would fill in the ovals, but this was the old, remember the old ballot machines?
Oh,
we had?
Yeah, I miss those days, yeah.
And so when I walked into the booth, Lieberman was like way down on the bottom.
Yeah.
During the general election. And people found him.
Yeah.
I mean, people found him. So he comes back after losing the primary to Ned Lamont to winning the general election as basically the de facto Republican candidate because they just said, listen, we need this guy back. He's moderate. He's good for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And he won. And he won. And Schlesinger got it. Wasn't even much of a factor, really.
And he knew it, too. And Lenny, I was talking to Gary Rose from Sacred Heart before, and I remember being in the press pool, covering Ned Lamont around the state and covering Joe Lieberman, and even the reporters I was hanging out with, Lenny, before I did a lot of shows like this, print TV and radio, were all like, Lieberman's going to destroy Lamont in the general election. It's almost like everybody knew,
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had a nice win. It was. I think what happened was in that with Ned. Ned won the primary, and he didn't really pivot to the unaffiliated voters.
Yeah,
kind of swing these things in this state, and having a lot of Republican support and galvanizing the unaffiliated voters. And some of the Democrats, Joe Lieberman was able to win.
Mm-hmm.
Intriguing election.
Yeah. Now, Lenny, before we say goodbye and I talk to you next week on Thursday morning, hopefully, have you ordered a Bible yet from your former boss, $59.99? And yet MSNBC is talking about it and CNN. So here we go with the free advertising, Lenny.
Oh yeah, it's the Trump Bible, you know. That's only a map. Forget the original Bible. Jeez. It's the Trump Bible. That's how it works. I mean, he's got it's intriguing how it just never ends, right? It's the greatest show on earth.
Yeah.
He kind of, you know, my former boss talked about, when I would work for him, he talked about, I'm like the new P.T. Barnum, right? And some level he is at a political level, but, you know, he's got his first trial that looks like it's going to go forward on April 15th. And that is going to be one icky affair because it's the Stormy Daniels
well,
trial.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating, you know, for your listeners. I actually watched the Stormy Daniels documentary the other day, and I find it fascinating. The Stormy Daniels documentary is you can watch it on Peacock, right? of all networks.
Oh,
if you don't want the Stormy Daniels thing, watch it on Peacock.
Oh, boy.
But, right. You know, she provides some tidbits into what she'll testify to. You're going to have Stormy Daniels, and you're going to have Michael Cohen as the key witnesses in that case, and it's going to be an intriguing mess
and yet today, Lenny, your old boss, he understands entertainment and he understands messaging, while Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Bill Clinton are raising money at Radio City tonight. Millions are going to raise. Your old boss goes on Long Island in Massapequa across the water to, sadly, the wake of this New York City policeman, this young husband, young father, and he's ramming home the crime message. And I'm sure the men and women in blue there, a lot of them, Lenny, were glad to see him.
That's kind of intriguing for a guy who's been charged four times.
Well, still.
Obviously, that's good politics. It's a good contrast to what's going on. I'm intrigued by what's going to happen at this trial. I think it's going to be a complete and total circus in a couple of weeks. It's going to be awesome entertainment.
And his numbers are going to go. And his numbers will go up.
Probably. Yeah.
All right, Lenny Grimaldi. Lenny, have a great weekend. We'll talk next week on Thursday morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we'll talk next week.
All right, thanks, Lenny. Okay. And as you just heard Chris Williams in the news there say, as far as the UConn men's basketball team is concerned, they're already in the Sweet 16, so March Madness, the field of 64, whittled down now to 16. It'll get further trimmed by the end of the weekend as they head to the Final Four eventually. But the college hockey championships, culminating, of course, in the Frozen Four, they get underway all the teams participating this weekend. It is a field of 16, kind of similar to where we are with the basketball right now. Four regions, and of course, the defending national champion Quinnipiac University Bobcats are on the road. Where are they playing? Who are they playing? What does the tournament look like? And can the Bobcats repeat? Phil Jubileo, my buddy, my pal, a former broadcast partner on Quinnipiac University radio broadcast, and I was stoked to share the booth with Phil a couple of weeks ago. Phil Jubileo joins us. You see him on Bobcat Games on ESPN Plus to talk about the Bobcats region, which is kind of a tough one, and the tournament in general. Phil, good evening. How are you?
Hey there, Paul. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I love that you have the time here. So, Phil, this field, out of the roughly 60-plus teams that play the highest level of college hockey, Division I college in the NCAA, they start with 16 teams and four regions. So, first, Phil, talk about the Quinnipiac region. Where are they, and how tough will it be to get out of that region?
It'll be tough. The Bobcats are playing in Providence. They will play tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock, and they've got Wisconsin. It's the 8-9 seed between those two teams. And Wisconsin has the 8 seed. The Bobcats fell in the ECAC semifinals up at Lake Placid last weekend. An uninspiring 3-0 loss to St. Lawrence, a team that has had their number. They've beaten them twice, a la what Colgate did to the Bobcats last season, beating them twice. And then they lost to Colgate in the ECAC semifinals, went off to win the national championship. And the Bobcats are hoping for a similar type of reset this time around. Wisconsin's going to be tough. They got off to a great start. They were number one in the nation for a time this season. They have amazing goaltending, but they have slipped a little bit as of late. I think the Bobcats should be able to win this game. The other half of the bracket, you've got Boston College in there, and they are the number one overall seed, and a lot of people expect BC to go all the way, and a lot of people are predicting a BC-BU final. It'll be interesting to see if that comes to fruition.
Yeah, and you know, Phil, BC and you and I have watched them. I watched them just manhandle BU a couple of weeks ago. I mean, they're and listen, anybody can be defeated. Michigan Tech, I read's got a hot goaltender too, but you know, BC, and I'm sure the people around here, the alums of BC who are following them, they're frightening good. They've gotten better and better and better as the year has gone on.
They have, but one thing that they are is very young. I look back in Minnesota last year, the number one team heading into the tournament, very young. A lot of NHL draft picks, a lot of potential future stars in that BC lineup. The NHL is going to be filled with them a season from now. And Quinnipiac is experienced as defending champions, and even without players that were on that team last year, a lot of experience. Hey, right now I'm watching Denver and UMass. No one expected this to be in double overtime with the game tied at one. Denver led the nation in goal scoring, and they've been held to just one, and UMass backed into the tournament because Denver won their conference, and so did Cornell. They won the Whitelaw Cup, and you know, UMass in their game against BC got crushed 8-1 in the Hockey East tournament. So again, anything can happen once you get down to these games, which makes it a lot of fun to me, which makes it an exciting tournament. There might be a lot of talent separation, but there are other factors that come into play, and I think age and experience is a big one that is a bit of an equalizer.
So you're saying it could be a little more rowdy than normal in Amherst in a few minutes, is what you're saying. There's a possibility.
There's a possibility. They had a power play a few minutes ago. Denver's goaltender looked like he pulled his groin and was going to get taken from the game. Ooh. He stayed in there, and it's still a 1-1 game, and he seems to be looking pretty good right now. And Denver got their goal in the first period. They had a 1-0 lead. UMass tied it in the second. But it's been a really exciting game, and BU's on right now. They were up the last time I checked, 2-0 over RIT, the last seed in the tournament. But these games are just so much fun because anything can happen. You do tend to see a fair number of upsets. It rarely goes chalk on the men's side in these tournaments.
Yeah, and the other regions, Phil, you mentioned Providence, but again, as you say, some of these regions have started already. Springfield, the Dakotas, and the Midwest region is outside St. Louis, correct?
It is. It's in Maryland Heights, and they're playing at the home of Lindenwood University, which is one of the newest teams in Division I college hockey, and they're basically playing in a recreational rink. It's about 2,500 seats. Now, here's the real shocker. Three of the four teams in this regional are North Dakota, Michigan, and Michigan State. North Dakota averages about 12,000 fans per game at the Engelstad Arena, and tickets on the secondary market are going for about $1,000 a ticket
right now. Hold it. Rewind that a second. Yeah. Their tickets for this matchup, a college hockey regional, $1,000 a head.
Yes. Yes, wow. Because there's only 2,500 seats, and you've got three, you know, North Dakota averages about 12,000, and then Michigan and Michigan State average big numbers as well. There is just a ton of demand to get into those games.
Wow. Phil Jubileo, thank you so much, and we will be in touch, you know, for Quinnipiac fans. We'll cross our fingers and see if we can talk down the road. Phil, thanks so much. Appreciate it, and behave yourself this weekend. Whatever you're doing, behave yourself, all right?
I'll do my best. I think the Bobcats are going to run it back. You heard it here first.
All right. There you go. Phil, thanks, buddy. We'll talk down the road. Phil Jubileo, the television voice on ESPN Plus of Quinnipiac Bobcats men's and women's ice hockey as well.